about as good a start as you could have for Tennessee. Tannehill looks for the home run ball. Separation! Khalif Raymond hauls it in. Touchdown, Titans!
Wow.
A deep one, 45 yards. Tannehill, a dime.
David, football, football David.
The Dave Dameshek Football Program. Available on Apple Podcasts and at NFL.com/DDFP. Now here's your host, Dave Dameshek.
Ryan Tannehill, Derrick Henry, Mike Vrabel, and a huge helping of the curse is supposed to take down the 14-2 Baltimore Ravens, one of four teams to come up short. And then on the other side of that, four teams move on to the final four of pro football, already eager with anticipation for the two title games upcoming this Sunday. Hi and hello and welcome to the Dave Dameshek Football Program. I hope all's well wherever you are here in Studio 66. We're soon to be joined via Skype by one of our favorites, the Digital Wall of Famer himself and older brother of Mitchell Schwartz, who, of course, toils on the offensive line for the Kansas City Chiefs, who took a good scare from the curse of Sposta as well. They went down 24-0. But because I understand the nuance of this vicious curse, which, of course, if you're a first-time listener to Dameshek, then the curse of Sposta needs a little explaining. Although, my pal Tony Romo explained it not once but twice during the game. Take a listen.
Kansas City, when you're such a favorite, it's almost a tougher spot to be in. And that's, you slept on the lead, right? Like you're supposed to win. You're almost like have a little anxiety with it. Whereas the other team's coming in free. They're freed up to lose. You're supposed to, right? That's a way better way, you know, to play in a game or any sporting event. And then all of a sudden, Kansas City gets behind by 24, and now they're freed up. They're supposed to lose. So now they can reset and now go play football and see what team goes to the AFC Championship.
Yeah, as Romo says, and, you know, and as I tweeted, people said, oh, Romo is stealing your bit, the curse is supposed to, but then I had to quote Bane, you know, I merely adopted it. He was born into the darkness, Tony Romo. He lived it, after all. He was 13-3 with the Dallas Cowboys when Eli Manning and company rolled in there many moons ago and left with a victory, and so began the legend of Eli Manning. Tom Brady vanquisher, but the Chiefs got a real scare. But I did say, beware, the one team that can pull this rally off here before they had begun said rally is those Kansas City Chiefs. And then, and the curse is supposed to, again, is that you have added pressure on you when you are expected to win. And you see the Titans, who are playing with a devil may care attitude because nobody expected them to be there. They're one of the few teams that can rightly say no one outside our locker room believed in us 6-8 weeks or so ago. Although, if I'm patting myself on the back, I will do it again by saying, I did tell you that that Titans team would take off if and when they installed Ryan Tannehill over Marcus Mariota. They did it in mid-October and have not really looked back since. Behind the glass there, Eddie Spaghetti, how you feeling? You had a big weekend. Did you get to drink in some football along with some micro beers and the band Tool on your visit to San Diego?
San Diego was great, but of course I had time to watch all the football games. I mean, my picks were not as good. I've been pretty good all year. I had my worst weeks. I went on a limb with the two upsets, but besides that, how can you complain? I mean, I know we don't get the AFC title game that me and you both wanted, the Lamar versus Mahomes, but seeing the Tennessee Titans come back, you know, and beat a team like that, thanks to Derrick Henry and thanks to Ryan Tannehill, and their defense is great. And then obviously Mahomes, I mean, you could argue that Chiefs game was probably the best performance by any team in like the history of the league. So, and then whoever did the schedule.
Well, who? I mean, the thing that it distinguishes it is that, I mean, we've seen, obviously, 28-3 was invoked quite a bit during Sunday's game and any number of other big rallies by teams. But the thing that separates this one from any other that I can think of in the NFL or even in college football is that they were getting blown out. I mean, 24 is properly a blowout.
It is, yeah.
And they ended up blowing out that team. It's really
To win by 20 points.
It was bizarre. I mean, they completed the rally before the second, but before they got into the locker room for halftime. It was crazy.
24 zip down, and they reversed it all. I felt it was like a snap of their finger, and they were back right in the game. And then, like you always talk about the home crowd, how if you are failing in front of your home crowd, and that could just really ruin everything for you because you just feel like you have no, you're done, you're toast, your fans are turning on you. And the weird thing was, like, it wasn't Mahomes and the offense's fault. Like, they just never really got the ball. It was all, like, these, you know, a muff punt, and they were just all these, like, sloppy plays. So once they kind of got the ball and Reed and Bieniemy's offense was rolling, it was like they just couldn't be stopped. They were, like, a train, like, without brakes. It was something to watch.
It's interesting, too, and our mutual pal and longtime Chiefs fan and producer here at NFL Media, Ryan Bartlett, said during that Lamar Jackson, the phenom, rightly wins the MVP, a spectacular season and all that, but Patrick Mahomes is the best quarterback. And then I started thinking, I said, yes, that's right. But then you watch Russell Wilson. And is there a distinction? I guess it doesn't really matter at this point, but it's worth pointing out. Offensive player of the year, offensive player in pro football, not for 2019, but if we're just looking to, like, over the last 2 years, Patrick Mahomes is the best offensive player in the NFL.
Without a doubt.
But the most valuable player is Russell Wilson.
Sure.
Right?
Yeah, I'm with you on that.
I mean, that distinction should be made, right? That Russell Wilson has now, we said this, 3-4 weeks ago, but you know, when everybody puts together and around the 100th year of the NFL and this all-time team that's come out and who are the top 10 quarterbacks in the history of pro football, and we can debate the guys who played in the 40s and 50s and all that kind of stuff. But I think Russell Wilson, in Super Bowl era, if you did the top 10 now, I think that now you have to put Russell Wilson in that mix.
I feel bad for him if it was one Pete Carroll handoff call to Marshawn Lynch, the books would be a lot different about Russell Wilson, what we think of him and Pete Carroll, obviously, with the...
Boy, that's so true. I mean, I know that resonates 5 years later, that call that they gave to him.
But anyway, in the here and now, I mean, outside of Tyler Lockett, who's established, they have tight end injuries, the offensive line's been shaky for what feels like at least 3 seasons. Both their top running backs and Carson and Penny go down. You bring in Marshawn Lynch off the street, who's just, like, frankly, the guy's not in football shape. He's a shell. He's more than a shell of what he was. It's bad to watch. And then your receiver you draft, DK Metcalf, who did come on in some games, but you know, when he during the draft process, he was told that he can't run routes. So it's like you have this kind of makeshift offense going on, and nothing is stable throughout the whole year. And like the one constant is Russell Wilson. I think I said on a few podcasts ago, besides really what Cam did with that Panthers team, which to me was kind of underwhelming when he won MVP when they went 15-1. Like that's the closest thing to what Russell Wilson's doing. So it was amazing to watch
that
him too.
Yeah, Cam dragged an offense. Mm-hmm. Russell Wilson dragged an entire team.
Sure.
It felt like, especially after Chris Carson and two other runners go down in the tail end of the year for the Seahawks. I mean, I really put this 20 in hindsight now that we see it in its entirety, to come within a couple of plays of getting to the NFC title game with that roster. I mean, what they had out on the field in Lambeau on Sunday, I put that up there with Elway in the 80s taking those rosters, those Broncos teams. I'm not talking the Terrell Davis two Super Bowls. I'm talking the teams that got whipped 3 times over by NFC juggernauts. Those Elway teams that he took that had no business getting that far in the playoffs. Marino had a year or two during his career. It wasn't just the lack of running back, and otherwise they had crummy defenses, and yet they were still relevant, getting to championship games. I mean, and there just are not very many examples of guys in NFL history since I've been watching that can, you always hear that, the will the team to victory. And by the way, Brady also has a couple of times in these last, I mean, maybe 8-10 years now, he's done at least once or maybe even 3 times drag some mediocre rosters pretty deep into the playoffs, even to the victory stand at the
sure.
Super Bowl. But anyway, tip of the hat to Russell Wilson, who rightly, whether you give it to him for a single season year or not, and Lamar Jackson deserves you know, the moniker most valuable player of 2019. Of course, a phenomenal year by that team. But Russell Wilson, most valuable player, and he, you know, a couple of years ago replaced Ben Roethlisberger, is my answer too. Fate of the planet hangs in the balance. You only get to pick the quarterback and nothing else about the game. The answer is clearly Russell Wilson at this point, right?
Sure. Without a doubt. I mean, like you said, it's not just carrying an offense, it's carrying a team. They're in Lambeau. They're versing Aaron Rodgers. It's like everything is against them, and you don't expect them to be in this game. I almost felt like, too, that Pete Carroll would sometimes want to take the ball even out of his hands. And like, that guy is your playmaker. Just let him do what he has to do on offense. Let him roll out and just create magic. I mean, I was rooting so hard for him, but I can never root against Russell Wilson and that team. They're just an easy team to root for. So, I mean, I know there was a controversial call in that game. Was it a first down or not, which would have obviously given the Seahawks the ball back? Who knows? But, you know, it is what it is, but it's still fun rooting for
him. Well, a couple things about that. Yeah, the red line that Davante Adams is now pushing, I don't know that that's any more exact than the yellow line, right? Because I think the marker, the actual marker, is on the other side of the field. So Davante Adams just kind of tweaking Seahawks fans with that sort of thing. I don't know. It just certainly looked like Jimmy Graham on the replay didn't get there. But I mean, and then people are pointing to the Texans costing themselves the game by kicking the field goal instead of going for it in that spot. I think that they should have, for the record. If they don't get it, you at least leave Mahomes a long field. And he has, you know, I think the kickoff return is a decisive play in that they kick the field goal. Mm-hmm. But if let's say they get a touchdown and everything plays out the same, I don't know how differently the game plays out. And then people are saying, bad fake punt, but that is an all-time classic. If that works, then, you know, Bill O'Brien's a hero. And instead, Sorensen makes a great play and ends that, and it looks bad. But the way the Chiefs were going and the way Patrick Mahomes can eliminate, you know, length of field with a single throw, I don't mind the call there. And I don't think that ultimately is the reason that the Texans lost the game. I think that when the Chiefs got rolling, that then they became the victim of supposed to. We're up 24-0. We're supposed to win at this point. And I think the pressure, once they got caught, once it got to 24-21, I had no doubt that the Chiefs were winning that game. The other side of things quickly, for all the heroics of Russell Wilson, I think Aaron Rodgers, even after a victory now, continues to be slept on. You know, I think 24 hours or whatever after that game, in which he was really very good, I think he's still not getting credit, because Russell Wilson has been deemed by, well, I guess just by me right there, as the more heroic figure from that game. But Russell Wilson, I mean, Aaron Rodgers, with a reminder of how dynamite he is. So many great things to root for, by the way, with possible Super Bowl matchups. I mean, Aaron Rodgers versus Patrick Mahomes would be wonderful. Chiefs v. Niners, a.k.a. the Montana / Young / everything else bowl would be a lot of fun too. Alex Smith went there. You know, obviously the Niners have a long history, Steve Bono, of passing their quarterbacks down to Kansas City. So that would be a good one. But I thought that the takeaway is, I think you're going to hear a lot of simple math going into this, and we'll talk to Jeff Schwartz about these things. A lot of simple math of, well, Derrick Henry just did that to the Ravens, so this is what you should expect on this coming Sunday. And you saw what the Packers just did, and so they're going to do. I don't think that those rules apply. They're too the teams that they're about to match up with are very different. I'll give you my final pick on the second podcast this week here on the DDFP. Mm-hmm. But I mean, I'm leaning heavily towards the Niners at this point. I think that there's going to have to be some weird flukes, maybe some special team stuff, some defensive touchdown, a defensive touchdown or something along those lines for the Packers to win this one. Cause I just think that the Niners, as you saw against the much better against the run Vikings, they got had. I don't think the Packers have a chance against that run.
It's fun because you have basically like both the NFC and the AFC have the ground and pound run first teams. And then you have the, air it out pass first teams in both the Chiefs and the Packers, and they're playing one another. So it's going to be like Richard Sherman versus Davante Adams. That's going to be a matchup that I'm looking forward to. And it's like, how many times could Bosa get to Aaron Rodgers? And the flip side, it's, you know, did the Chiefs have what it takes to stop Derrick Henry, or do the Titans have what it takes to stop any of Patrick Mahomes? You know, he may throw for 6, 7, 8 touchdowns. Like who knows? Like those are two. You know, we're kind of upset we didn't get to Lamar Jackson. I get that, but and I was obviously rooting for Russell Wilson, but I cannot complain. I think both these games are going to be dynamite.
Here's the only thing I'll throw up, and this isn't this isn't vapid cynicism, but I should have done a better job in preparing for this comment on a show that is being recorded right now, Eddie Spaghetti. So bear with me and help me out if you have any other examples to support this. Everybody has now decided, or they decided somewhere early in the third quarter watching the game in Arrowhead, well, the Chiefs are the best team, and they're going to win the Super Bowl now. But now that they have overcome this test. But history offers, the Super Bowl era offers very few examples of a team that is mostly kind of, you know, largely flawed. I know they have some defensive pieces, the Chiefs do, and obviously Tyreek Hill is as fast as anybody you've ever seen, and Travis Kelce is 1A or number one, and, you know, George Kittle, and we could have that debate about best tight end and all that. But they are not a top-to-bottom, really deep, great roster. There's very little evidence that a guy, that gunslinger, just like, our QB is carrying us here by himself kind of vibe, that works against great defenses. I don't know that the Titans count as a great defense, although they're going to be – I mean, it will all be – I mean, it was against the Texans as well. Mm-hmm. They didn't attempt to run the ball. They didn't need to run the ball, and – to win this game, I think they're going to have to just put up a big number against the Titans. If they get the Niners, though, history does favor the defense. The team that there is, I mean, from Dan Marino to the 15-1 '98 Vikings, and I'm, well, see, now I'm starting to tick these off, but 2011 Aaron Rodgers and so on. There's just not a ton of evidence that the 2018 Chiefs. How about that?
Yeah.
There's very little evidence that is enough that gets you over the hump. You might get to the Super Bowl. You're in the title game at least. So that's something to watch out for. But I'm not ready to make final predictions, so I don't even know why I've brought this up.
I know we've said it all season long. The 49ers get win after win after win. Not even just win. They get quality wins. And the Vikings on paper, and we've talked about it a lot. I know Hank's brought it up. Great roster, top to bottom. They have playmakers all over. And I was getting some heat on Twitter. I mean, I think overall, in terms of the teams that are left, the 49ers probably are the best team, top to bottom. They are just impressive in every facet. And I trust Jimmy G now. I will come out and say it. I totally trust Jimmy G. So I'm kind of with you in terms of the team that I would assume would win it at this point probably would be them. The thing about the Chiefs, though, is like the Chiefs could show you they could rattle off 7, 8 touchdown drives in a row. And I don't think the Chiefs could be any sloppier than they were to start that game. In a sense, like, you'd feel relieved, like, okay, we played probably our worst football ever this season, and we still found a way to come back and win by 20. So you got to feel pretty good about that. But then you have the Titans, who are the hot team. It's like, you know, you get the hot goaltender in hockey and you ride them. That's what Derrick Henry is right now. You're just riding them, and they could be like that team of destiny sort of thing. And Vrabel's, he's really coaching them up. And then obviously the team left, you have Rodgers, who's the, you know, that he's the guy who's done it, and he's the one veteran left. It's an interesting foursome left.
It's super fun, and the Titans now, as, I mean, it was easy to say in advance of the Baltimore game, I said everybody feels like, the Titans aren't the team that should get that far, but now that they survive and handle the Ravens the way they did, now you feel like, now they could go all the way, too. So the matchups are fun. I mean, ultimately, Chiefs-Ravens would have been juicy stuff based on the way the season tracked throughout. But anyhow, like I say, we'll give you our proper picks later in the week. But by the way, speaking of picks, I told you before the season the Niners would win the NFC West and the Rams wouldn't, because I felt Sean McVay and his offensive scheme, and I understand the differences on the offensive line and otherwise for the 2019 Rams and Todd Gurley being a little diminished and everything else, but I also felt like the Patriots provided the blueprint for the rest of football, and they fell back, and I said the Kyle Shanahan redemption story, while everybody was falling all over themselves a year ago to get anybody who ever knew Sean McVay, Kyle Shanahan was the sleeping giant among offensive geniuses, and that may be the difference. Well, listen, they're the number one seed, and they're going to be hosting the NFC title game, so I feel validated, but if they get all the way to the Super Bowl and win it, then I wonder... if Kyle Shanahan gets his due. I think the answer is clearly yes. Everybody is already praising him. But all right, enough about you and me, Kibitzen, about this. We'll give you our picks later in the week. Let's get to a guy who's tied in close to those Kansas City Chiefs and the line of scrimmage, all important at this time of the year. Let's talk to our main man right now, Jeff Schwartz. All right, here he is. It's been too long here on the DDFP. He is, after all, one of our digital wall of famers there. He has won a Shecky Award as our favorite football playing guest. I think that was 3 years ago. Yeah. It's our old pal and also, by the way, host of Jeff Schwartz is Smarter Than You on The Athletic. By the way, there's a show on there with Damashek's name called Football Fact Check. You might also want to check out there. Hey, it's Jeff Schwartz. What's happening, fella?
Glad to be here. I misplaced the Shecky. I'm sorry. I'll find it. This hand over here. I'll find it. I'll get it for you. I'll put it up there.
It's outrageous that you don't have it up there on your personal wall of fame. Who do you, before we jump in on brother Mitchell Schwartz's achievement in the divisional round and a quick breakdown of all things that happened there, who do you self-identify with? If Jeff Schwartz were voted into the Pro Football Hall of Fame and you had a choice of what team you go in as, what would it be?
Well, the best season I had was in Kansas City in 2013. And my brother plays there now. We can be dual Kansas City Chiefs. We can be the first pair of brothers on the same team in the Hall of Fame. Is that true? I don't know.
I guess so. You also must have been on, I assume you've been on Monday night and Sunday night football at some point, right? So you did those things where you're like Jeff Schwartz, blah,
yes,
kind of thing. Oregon. What did you say? You said Oregon?
Yeah. I loved elementary school, but I'm not repping it in the thing. I don't get why guys don't say they're college. I mean, you went to college. I give you a scholarship. Honor your college.
Yeah, listen, people like to shout out various things, but you do have a good collection there of football helmets and photographs and everything else. But anyhow, let's talk about the guys still in the mix here, the teams that fell away over the past weekend. And I guess let's start with what's going to be remembered as a historic ball game, because I don't think we've ever seen people citing things like people digging back to the Doug Williams Super Bowl where they fell down early and then rallied back and put up 41 or whatever it was. But the difference with this one versus any other pro football game I can ever recall watching is one team was getting blown out and then they blew that team out by the end of the game and, in fact, took the lead back before even halftime. Have you ever seen? Am I missing a game in history that went that way?
No, only Pac-12 After Dark can even come up with a scenario as good as that one. It was a scoregami, too. First time in NFL history, 51-31. Think about this. If with 10 minutes left-ish in the second quarter, Texans were up 24-0. By halftime, it was 28-0. By 8 minutes in the fourth quarter, it was 51-31. They went on a 51-7 run in like 30 minutes of game time.
It was
nearly impossible.
When it was 28-24, I tweeted that that they're going to end up going up 24. They're going to win the game by 24, which was their deficit at one point in the game. And they could have done it, too. And Andy Reid, it felt like, kind of like showed a little humanity. He was like, just kick the field goal. We could press this down inside the five, but enough's enough already. Hey, by the way, before anything else, what's your rooting interest now? Because, of course, like you say, you had a good year with the Chiefs. You spent some time there. Brother Mitchell is looking for a Super Bowl trip. But you grew up a San Francisco 49ers fan. Yeah. What's Jeff's rooting interest here? Would it feel bad on some level? Because I remember I asked Joey Bosa this in the preseason about, like, how good do you want Nick to be? Do you want it, like, it'd be nice if he did well, but do you want at Thanksgivings in, 2035 and beyond, like, do you want the conversation to be, Joey, you were great, but Nick was a little bit better. Do you want that same conversation going down around your Thanksgiving powwows?
Well, considering I got nowhere near to even a single All-Pro vote, and Mitch has been a four-time All-Pro. I think he's passed me already in talent, which I'm pretty much okay with at this point. I've actually never been I've been fine with that. I'd love a ring, obviously, if I got one when I played. But look, here's the deal. I grew up a Niners fan, of course. I've kind of fallen out of that. I live on the East Coast now. I'm not watching Niners probably as much as I have in the last 10 years or so, just because I've been playing and following teams out east and following my brother. It'd be better if the Chiefs were to win Sunday than play the Packers. I think the Packers are far worse than the Niners. So I probably have to root against the Niners. I think the Niners, look, I know we're projecting. The Niners are going to be a tough out for the Packers. And they're going to be a tough out for the Chiefs or the Titans. They're very good. They're very balanced. And I kind of hope they lose this weekend so it gives the Chiefs an easier path to win a Super Bowl, which, by the way, obviously I'd be glad for my brother. But Andy Reid needs a Super Bowl so people stop mocking him and doing it. Like, he is – look, it's funny. We talk about Sean Payton as he won the Super Bowl in kind of this sense of, like, whenever he messes up, it's not his fault. Oh, he's won before. Oh, this and that. Andy Reid – has won for longer, for more, with different quarterbacks, with worse quarterbacks, with different people. And he just needs that Super Bowl win so people will get off his back.
I don't disagree with the sentiment, what you're hinting at, and I would prefer to talk about the team still around here, this Final Four. But a quick detour about that. You hear now, so it's shaping up now that pretty clearly it's going to be Sean Payton and it's going to be Drew Brees again in 2020. Not a little bit underwhelming if you're a Saints fan at this point? I know that there's not a better alternative. There's not a quarterback you're going to go and get that's going to make things better. Obviously, you're not going to look to replace Sean Payton. But still, it's kind of uninspiring at this point. If you're a Saints fan, like, oh, yeah, this time with Drew Brees, now that he's 40, and it feels like every year, even though he got a protracted break in the middle of this season, it does feel like He keeps coming up a little lame in January, and you're going to roll with him again, huh?
You, unlike the Pats bringing back Brady, who we can just see them adding a couple pieces on offense and just being fine next year, to your point, the Saints feel like they have a long way to go to get back to where they want to be. They only have one offensive weapon right now, really, in Thomas. And you're right, Drew Brees, at the end of these seasons, has just not been the same guy. And he's not going to get a six-week break next year, presumably, right? And you're not going to have Teddy Bridgewater, probably, to win you five games in a row if Brees does get hurt. But you kind of said it, though. Where are you going to go? I mean, you're in a salary cap number with the guys you have to win now with Drew Brees. Same with the Patriots, honestly, is that the Patriots let Brady walk, and the Saints let Brees walk. You're basically saying we're tearing it all down and we're starting over again. And most teams don't want to do that until they're absolutely forced to do that. So I get why they bring Brees back. You probably, it's a great draft to get yourself another wide receiver, and you try to run it back and you hope luck is on your side this year.
I hear you. But yeah, I just wonder now. It's kind of like last year you had the fire lit under you. The narrative was there for the Saints to rally after the bad call in the title game a year ago, and it came up lame because of the Vikings. But all right, I want to ask you about specifically that matchup, Mitchell and that offensive line and the guys running the ball behind that offensive line in Kansas City. And to me, the kryptonite has been two sides of it. The line of scrimmage is everything. And I talk all the time about over the in the 20th century, last 15 years-ish, if you go back through and you look at, and I was just talking with our mutual pal, Chris Long, by the way, go back and listen to his great podcast. Was thrilled to join him for an extended talk in advance of these divisional round games. And we touched on the fact that, yes, I believe in the quarterback league in the 21st century, there's very little evidence of a really great Hall of Fame worthy quarterback being on a bum team for any amount of time. But on the other hand, the other thing that for all the talk about, you got to have a number one wide receiver, got to have a shutdown corner, you have to have this and you have to have that. The thing you have to have almost across the board is an ability to control the line of scrimmage. And I know that sounds like some old curmudgeon guy from 1978, but it also happens to be true now. And it feels to me like the Chiefs don't do that because they have Dan Marino 2.0, and that obscures everything. But do you agree with me as I complete this monologue windup of a question to you is my concern has been since the Colts game in Arrowhead. I don't know if that Chiefs defense is built to stop anybody from banging away. Concern number one, as Derrick Henry comes into town, although they are much better, assuming Chris Jones comes back. That's one concern. But two is I don't know that they have anybody, including Damian Williams, who finished things off nicely. They don't have the ability to just grind in the fourth quarter and put the game away. Is that going to be their undoing?
Well, it's been their undoing in other playoff runs, right? We saw last year it was their undoing, where the Patriots just casually walked into Arrowhead and rammed it down their throat to the end of the game. And I feel like Tennessee's going to do, at least attempt to do the exact same thing. The problem with the Titans right now, in my opinion, is that you cannot win playoff games three in a row, throwing for 88 and 75 yards. Now, Tannehill has shown he can be better than that. So what happens when the Chiefs score 21-20? Look, the Chiefs, they might lose this game, but they're not losing 28-12, okay? They're losing this game 35-32, right? They're losing this game in a high-scoring shootout. The Titans play a bunch of zone coverage. They're not going to be able to contain the Chiefs. But to your point, if you're handicapping this game, the better defense overall is probably the Titans. The better trench play, combined offensive defensive line, slight edge to the Titans because their best offensive linemen play the Chiefs' best two defensive linemen. On the flip side, the Titans' interior defense is really good, and they play, and that's the weaker part of the Chiefs' offensive line. The slight edge there. The difference, obviously, is quarterback, and Pat Mahomes is unbelievably amazing, and they do it two different ways. This is kind of like the new analytics team, right? The Chiefs. We pass the ball. We throw swing routes as run plays, and we don't care if we can't run the football. Tennessee's the exact opposite. It's why, by the way, the Titans are outstanding in the red zone at converting touchdowns. They run the ball. You have to run the ball well in the red zone to be good in that spot. Because everything condenses, right? You only have 30 yards if you start at the 20. There's not as many windows to throw the ball. And a lot of teams play two-high safeties. Two-high safeties equals run the football. There's one less guy in the box. That's why the Titans have been so good in the postseason, really the last 6 weeks in that area. The Chiefs have not. The Chiefs, until last weekend, had not been very good in the red zone. So I think that is – there's a distinct path to the Titans winning this game. There's one path only, in my opinion, and that's why it's tough to see them winning this game. But it's run the football – control the tempo, and play just good enough defense, just good enough to limit 41 points on the Chiefs.
I agree with most everything you say, and you can go back to Bill Walsh in the early portions of the Niners 80s dynasty there before Jerry Rice arrives, and that was kind of how they didn't have a finisher. I mean, Wendell Tyler was, right, I guess, as close as you could get for having a finisher behind Joe Montana in the fourth quarter, but it really was a lot of short passes, a lot of passing on early downs in safe passes. But I also think the other side of things with the Titans is I know that they have to commit everything they possibly can to stopping the moose that is Derrick Henry. But do you, I also think, I don't, I know Honey Badger is now splashing big in the last 6-8 weeks here, but is that enough? Do they have enough to really stop those physical receivers of Tennessee? Cause I think if they come out early, here's my prediction. The Titans will come out early and they'll try to use AJ Brown and company to shock the Arrowhead crowd a little bit.
So I have not been as high on the Chiefs defense as their stats have been over the last month of the season. Look, I think we have to look at schedule a lot of times when we discuss this. They came off a bye and played Derek Carr. Derek Carr, the Raiders, really have been outscored the last three times against the Chiefs, like 125-20, okay? They haven't played very well. Then they played Drew Locke in his third start in the snow at Arrowhead, okay? Then they played the Mitch Trubisky-led Bears. Ooh, scary. And they played Phillip Rivers, who can't even move, right? And then they played this weekend, and we saw blown coverage on the first touchdown by Ted. I thought Watson, by the way, missed a lot of guys, a lot of high throws. There were guys open. He just missed them. I have not been sold on the defense as much as everyone else has because we've seen time and time again that they just come up a little bit short. Now, Honey Badger, been a great addition. I thought he played well yesterday as well. I really like the move. Very classy, not blow up Deshaun Watson.
Yeah, right.
On that. Because like, look, they're boys. You're up by 20. You played well. The Badger, like, you knew. He felt you there. He knew you were there. He knew you could have killed him. You didn't do it. I like that, by the way. So, yeah, I worry about the Chiefs defense. I think that, like I said, the Chiefs are going to win any game from here on out, two games left possibly, with their offense. Because the Niners, by the way, if they play in the Super Bowl, The Niners have the Titans game plan on steroids, right? The play action pass, run the football, even better offensive play caller, and their defense is much better. So the Chiefs have to score a ton of points. It's the way they've always had to do it, and they're going to do it again on Sunday.
What do you think of talking about matchups and who you're doing these things against? Yeah. I said it at the 2018 draft, and then I said it once Joe Flacco was hurt. I said, you watch, this Ravens team is going to be better with Lamar Jackson, and then over the offseason, I don't need to tell the whole story, they commit to the Lamar Jackson offense, and here we are. And as a side note, as a huge college football guy, like you are, Jeff Schwartz, I love that when we were growing up, that it was all about the diversity of offensive styles in college football, and that distinguished itself from pro football because everybody was running the same offense in the NFL. It's fun in the NFL now that you have a QB coming in there that hasn't thrown for 100 yards yet against Patrick Mahomes, and they're just doing it with Derrick Henry riding the moose, over and over and over again. That's fun stuff, I think. But where do you say now? Do you feel validated? Because it felt like more than any – in fact, Eddie Spaghetti behind the glass can tell you, I said over and over and over again, not since Chip Kelly got to the NFL was there a bigger – decision to make for the analysts and predictors in football was, is the Lamar Jackson offense going to work? I said, oh, it's going to work in 2019. You kept saying that they're going to get got by somebody, and now they got got. Yeah. Do you feel validated?
No. I mean, Lamar won the MVP, right? He's going to win the MVP. Like, I don't know how validated I can feel after that, but I do think that this is now part of who they are, and whether it's fair or not fair, they're now the team that's really good in the regular season and not as good in the postseason. And whether that's Lamar's fault or not, I don't really know. I haven't rewatched the game. There were guys open and he hit their hands and they dropped the ball. But you can sort of feel, look, I'll tell you, there seemed to be a difference. When Pat Mahomes got down yesterday, you saw him on the sidelines, like firing his dudes up, getting, like, he didn't seem fearful of the situation. I'm not saying Lamar was fearful, but I just didn't feel that same vibe as the Pat Mahomes vibe I got, where like everything was going to be okay, guys. We got this, because the Ravens offense is not built to come from behind. I know we had a bunch of yards, and I know they missed on fourth down and things change, but they didn't make those plays in the end. And so now it's up to them to end the postseason, in the offseason, figure it out. They're going to win 12 games against next year. No one's going to stop this offense again. And the playoffs, there's going to be pressure on them to win the playoff game. I thought the Titans did a great job of not playing scared. They came downhill on defense fast, had an aggressive game plan, no hesitation in tackling, and they went ahead and gave it to the Ravens. I was shocked. Dude, there's been a lot of surprises since week 17, right? The Patriots losing the Dolphins. This one surprised me. I thought that the offense was at such a high level that it really couldn't be stopped, honestly. And I give the Titans so much credit. It was unbelievable.
Well, listen, but once you get the template, and by the way, it is not different than pointing at what happened to the play action under center offense of the Rams in 2018. The Patriots kind of figured it out with the help of Todd Gurley's knee. And once the blueprint was provided, now Sean McVay is going to have to modify things. Yeah. And I don't think Greg Roman, it would appear, he's going to end up staying there, but they're going to have to modify that often. You can't just go into 2020 running the same thing. Won't teams be able to copycat to some degree? And the thing that the Titans have are those two guys on the inside, in Simmons and Casey, replicating that is the trick. But still, isn't the trick out? And I don't think it's a gimmick offense or anything else, anything more than what the Rams did last year.
Yes and no. I think the Ravens need to add a big wide receiver to give themselves like a third down, like not a tight end, right? Like a big wide receiver to go get a smaller defensive back. But I would say probably not. Like the Titans have tried some things other teams have done. Like the Bills tried this. The Patriots tried it. It just did not work. Where basically you funnel everything to the outside. And I do wonder how much Marcus Mariota running this offense in practice was very helpful for them. Because I think the speed of Lamar Jackson, I think, really surprises teams when you see them, when you see him play the very first time. It's just, he's faster than any other person on the field and quicker. And Mariota's not that quick, but he moves pretty well. And he knows how the offense is supposed to work, having played in some sort of this offense in college. So I do wonder how much that played a role. But look, teams are going to try to do it. I just think Lamar Jackson is that much better. I don't think their offense did anything different. They just kind of got beaten by the Titans.
Wonder if Marcus Mariota, by running that scout Ravens offense, cost himself money in the offseason, because if the Ravens continued their role and they won the Super Bowl, then everybody would be desperate to copycat that offense, and so people would go get Marcus Mariota.
One of the most ridiculous things I've heard this offseason, by the way, is the idea that Bill Belichick wants to run this offense. I don't know where that came from. I don't understand. Bill Belichick has drafted the same quarterback for the last 20 years. He has drafted a pocket passer with some – Brady used to be able to move a little bit with some mobility, right? He has never once drafted a quarterback that could even run a five-second 40. Now all of a sudden he sees the Ravens do it in the regular season and he wants to draft Jalen Hurts and run this offense. I don't understand why people think like that. There's no sign he's ever wanted to run any offense in the offense he's running now.
Well, the other thing is that Belichick, as a student of history, would probably point to is it's fun. It can work for a season. It can work for a few seasons. But who ends up winning the Lombardi? There still is not, starting from Kaepernick going forward, there has not, and RG3 and all that, there has not been a guy who wins the Super Bowl an offense or a team playing that kind of ball. The other thing real quick is then, before we let you go, is now jump to, you talk about drafting Brady Light, Jimmy G, looking good. And I know the narrative was forged 6 weeks in when they struggled against the Skins in a deluge that they could. Well, see, he's a passenger on this ride and all that. Jimmy G keeps making big time throws and has for now 3 months, and yet people refuse to acknowledge it. To me, it seems like I love that secondary for the Packers. They're going to need to pick six Jimmy G or something like that, because I just don't see the pieces of the Packers defense stopping that run game. Right? Aren't they going to gash them all day long?
Yes. And you know, the Niners have a little bit of Titans in them, right? They're going to run the football and they're going to play action pass. But we've seen throughout the year, the Ravens game, the Saints game, that Jimmy G is not asked to do as much as Pat Mahomes or Russell Wilson. But when he's asked to do it, he can do it. And he does it very well. Now, the question always is that he does kind of make one or two silly throws a game when he really shouldn't. And zone coverage at times can fool him. But, yeah, the idea that he's not good enough to lead the Niners to Super Bowl, I think, is just not true. It's lazy to say that, because it's not what the film shows. It's not what his performance shows. It's not what the game shows. Look, you can be a system quarterback. It's fine. It worked for Tom Brady for years. It's okay to be a system quarterback. That means you have a great coach. So there's nothing wrong with that.
The great Jeff Schwartz, excellent stuff. I'm sure it's exciting times in the Schwartz household spread across football America, including yours. Man, could kibitz with you, and since you sit in Charlotte, North Carolina, would love to hear about what the Panthers are going to do. But we'll pick that up at another time. Make sure you check out Jeff Schwartz is Smarter Than You, available on The Athletic. He does one free one and one for subscribers. As does the Football Fact Check. Before we let you go, just give us the final score of the national championship game.
Ooh, the one tonight. I'll go, I haven't thought of this. Let me go LSU 34, Clemson 30.
Okay. I think the Tigers complete it and get them by double digits. I think they get them by 10. All right. The great Jeff Schwartz, everybody. All right, so that's it. Jeff Schwartz, dynamite as always, right, Spaghetti?
He's great. Glad to have him back on. We haven't had him in quite some time.
I know. Yeah, it's been too long. I still am not clear on what he's rooting for, though. Sounds like the Chiefs. His boyhood loyalty.
I was going to say, between teams he's rooted for, played on, his brother on a team, it's just like he has like ties into like half the league. So, I mean, whatever. I just love Jeff for his analysis and his Twitter use. So he's always a great guest.
I like that he fights people on Twitter all the time.
He's aggressive.
I tell him, cut that crap out. Why do you let people get your goat like that?
It is funny.
Why do you care what people tweet at you?
It's
fun to talk with people.
He's... he's a guy that is like a really he was an exceptional offensive lineman, and people like still doubt what he says about the NFL, like just regular Joe Schmoes on Twitter. And it's so, I mean, and he, I think he's the one guy who just takes the bait because he's like, no, I do know more than you, and I'm going to explain why. So I find that kind of funny.
It is great. And speaking of great, I had a great time with Chris Long again. I know the games are already in the books, but fear not, we did a deep dive on uniforms for at least 10 to 20 minutes before we even started talking about football. Some great stuff in there from a guy who knows what he's talking about, plus Chris Long. No, I mean, plus Dave Damashek is what I meant. And the uniform talk. Now, that's my area of expertise, and you want to listen in on that. It was very fun, and we discussed a home and home, so we'll be talking with Chris on this side at some point soon. And speaking at some point soon, we'll be back in a mere 48 hours to kibitz about what's going to happen in the two title games. Only three pro football games left. Everybody enjoy them as much as you can. We'll be back to break them down for you. Until then, for Eddie Spaghetti and Jeff Schwartz, thanks so much, football fans. It's been a thin slice of heaven.